Welcome back to the Union Edge with Laborers Talk Radio. I'm Brittany Sheets, and I'm here with Angela Bachman today.
Thanks for joining us, and if you miss an episode, you can find us online at theunionedge.com. You can check iTunes or Stitcher or SoundCloud and catch a podcast.
And a quick thank you to the United Steelworkers International and IUOE Local 66 here in Pittsburgh for all of your support. We really appreciate it.
So right now, we are going to hop over with our friends at EPI. We have Marnie Von Wilpert joining us today. Hey, Marnie, how are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are y'all?
Oh, we're good. We're having some fun talking about some interesting things today on the program. And this is definitely something we should be talking about. For anybody who might have missed it, can you give us a little bit of a background on what the persuader role is and why it's kind of shined the spotlight on the avoidance of unions in the industry?
Yes. So the persuader role is actually promulgated last year in 2016 in March under the Obama administration's Department of Labor. And basically the persuader role would have helped level the playing field for workers by letting them know the source of any anti-union messages they receive during union drives in their workplaces. So persuaders is a really nice term for anti-union consultants or union busters, pretty much folks who are professional consultants who come into a workplace to help management defeat a union drive. And federal law has required employers and their persuading consultants to disclose their persuader activities since 1959. This problem has been going back quite a while. It was the Labor Management Disclosure and Reporting Act of 1959 in which Congress first said, we're not so sure about these persuaders. Some of this might be free speech, but some of it might be violating labor law. So instead of prohibiting persuaders from coming into the workplace, they decided to regulate them through disclosure and transparency. And there's two ways persuaders can come in to the workplace and attempt to dissuade employees from voting for the union. One is called direct persuasion, in which the hired consultant comes in and meets with employees face-to-face in one-on-one meetings or in group meetings and pitches management's message straight to them directly. That's direct persuasion. But then there's indirect persuaders, which is what the persuader role was trying to get at here. And that's when a consultant comes in and operates solely behind the scene, very similar to the Wizard of Oz behind the curtain, pulls all the strings, usually produces very high-quality videos against the union, like we just saw that happened in the Nissan plant in Canton, Mississippi. Similar videos were shown at the Boeing union election. They make T-shirts for people to wear that say vote no. They do all of the, they draft the employer's speeches. They coach management on which employees to target based on their level of preference for or against the union. It's very professional, time-tested, anti-union campaign tactic work, but they're all behind the scenes, so employees only see their managers bringing these messages to them, and they never get a chance to know who is paying for all of this, where the messages are coming from. And so this disclosure law is very similar to campaign finance disclosure laws, where voters in the political arena should know the source of the materials being thrown at them, just as employees in union elections should get to know the source of those materials as well. So the problem with the persuader rule that the Obama DOL was trying to close is there is an exception in the statute that says employers don't have to report if labor relations consultants merely give them advice. And advice was never determined or defined in the statute. So it was up to the Department of Labor to say, well, what does advice mean? Sadly, for the last 50 years since the 1960s, the Department of Labor has viewed all indirect persuader activity in which a management consultant is behind the scenes coaching the employer on what to say, and then the employer delivers it to its employees, not as indirect persuasion, but it's been construing that as advice, which means that the Department of Labor itself, when it published its Notice of Proposed Rulemaking in the Federal Register back in 2011, when this rule was being considered, the Department of Labor realized we are missing most persuader reports because we've been construing indirect persuasion as advice for 50 years. And so they closed that loophole last year in 2016 in March by redefining what the term advice means and making sure that exemption for reporting under the statute is much smaller, so that if anyone's coming in and drafting speeches to give to management intending that those are used to persuade against the union, that's no longer advice, that's reportable, you got to put it up on DOL's website.
So I guess I have to ask why this is significant. What does it matter whether the hired consultant comes in and talks to the employees versus a manager just telling them, telling the employees what that person had said for them to say?
No, it's a great question. And there's a couple reasons. One is the amount of money that employers spend on these outside consultants usually totals in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. And it's one thing to tell employees, listen, if the union comes in, we don't know what the economic consequences will be for our business. We may not be as competitive. We may have to shut down. We don't know. Or even during collective bargaining negotiations. So I should say that this also applies during collective bargaining. It doesn't apply just to union elections, but that's usually where we see persuaders most, is in the election. But if during bargaining, they coach management on to tell them, oh, there's not enough money for pay increases, yet out the back door, management's paying $200,000-$300,000 for consultants, that kind of really lessens their credibility when they're trying to pitch to workers the economic status of their business. So that's one reason. But the second is more so just that it really helps level the playing field for workers when they're trying to organize. There's often an argument given to workers against unionization that says, oh, we are a family at our business and we really don't want a third party intervening in our family relationship. Well, there is a third party intervening. It's they're behind the scenes and they're working with management trying to single out pro-union workers to try and dissuade them from the union. So it really, it helps make elections so much more transparent so that employees are given a better chance to evaluate their options before they vote.
That's a very good way of putting that, that there's already a kind of secret backdoor third party working in motion here, because I don't think a lot of people think about it like that.
Exactly. And that's part of the reason that this rule has been fought so steadfastly since it came out. So the rule was issued in March 2016. Less than a month later, in April, a Republican representative in Congress, Bradley Byrne, filed a Congressional Review Act resolution to try to overturn the rule. That was working its way through Congress when three different industry and business groups sued in three different district courts throughout the United States. And a district court in Texas issued an injunction shortly thereafter in June 2016. And here we are about a year later, and the Trump administration is rescinding the rule completely. So the amount of money and effort put into trying to overturn this rule really speaks volumes about how important it would have been to helping unmask all the union avoidance industry players and financing systems and whatnot going on to defeat unions. But unfortunately, looks like right now the rule will be rescinded and we'll have to try again in a future administration.
So is that how we would fight this then? We just have to wait until the next administration and then what?
Well, I mean, sadly, right now, actually today is the end of the comment period. Right now, if folks do want to comment, they have until midnight tonight on federalregister.gov to issue comments to the Department of Labor saying that do not rescind the persuader rule. You know, it took 5 years to get it out before, and a lot of analysis and work was put into this rule. Why suddenly a year later are you rescinding it? So that's one thing folks can do. But sadly, if they do go through with rescinding the rule, then they have to go through the entire Administrators Procedure Act of promulgating a new one, which it took 5 years under the Obama administration, so it will probably take a long time going forward as well, unfortunately. But, you know, writing representatives and senators and letting them know that you are paying attention to this is important. And one thing that I think is really important to keep in mind is that, you know, persuader activity is happening all the time, and it's really hard for folks to see it because the statutory reporting requirements are being evaded. And I was talking to folks on the ground in Mississippi right after the Nissan election who were calling in and asking, reporters were asking me, how do we prove and find out how much money went into the anti-union campaign? Because it was quite an intense campaign waged against the employees here. And sadly, I said there's nothing we can do unless they have other filings they have to do for publicly traded companies, such as nonprofit hospitals, for example. They do have to disclose a lot of their spending and what they've done in the past. And turns out some hospitals who receive state Medicaid funds were spending millions of dollars trying to hire persuaders to quash public employee union drives. And so there's other ways to find out by luck and chance and happenstance, but it's a huge piece of the picture going on behind the scenes among union organizing drives. And I think it's unfair to the public and to employees that they don't get to see that picture.
I definitely couldn't agree with you more. That is such a valid point and such a point that people don't realize. And on that note, we have got to run. We are out of time. But real quick before we go, where can people read more about what you guys are doing at the Economic Policy Institute?
Yes, great. Please feel free to go to our website. We are Economic Policy Institute at epi.org, and we have a whole blog called the Working Economics Blog that we update pretty much daily on different issues going on with workers, and we are monitoring what's going on in the Trump administration and the Department of Labor and Congress to make sure that workers' rights are heard and policies are not ignored, even though they're coming out the back door like this.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Marnie.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
All right. We're going to have to get you back. That was Marnie Von Wilpert. She is with the Economic Policy Institute. I'm Brittany Sheets here with Angela Bachman, and you've been listening to The Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio.